Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, March 19th. I'm Ray Graff. If you're looking to make some improvements around the house, we have a person to talk to today. Our friend Darren Tracy joins us once again today. Darren is a licensed professional engineer and construction specialist with extensive experience in renovation and property management. He joins us every so often to offer his expertise. Call now if you have a question. 800-348-2551 is our number. 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org or 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy and your home improvement calls. Coming up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's time once again for home maintenance, repair, and improvement today. Darren Tracy is here. Darren is licensed. That's where that came from. He's a licensed professional engineer with experience in construction, renovation, and property management. He's a Building Performance Institute certified building analyst and a licensed master plumber. He runs the West Branch Engineering Consulting and Construction Firm with his wife, and he's a director of the Capital District Chapter of the New York State Society of Professional Engineers. You have a question for Darren? Give us a call. Or Dyson, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. Darren Tracy, how you doing, man?
Doing great.
You know, you spend a lot of time in warm climes in the cold weather, but you're back here and the weather's good. You must have brought it with you.
Brought it up.
It's really nice out. Really nice.
It's, you know, such a gift after a long winter.
So what do you have going on?
Well, this past weekend, I consulted on a Adirondack Great Camp, a modest Adirondack Great Camp. They had some,
Let me stop you there. You showed me a picture. You sent a picture. A little more than modest. It's pretty darn nice.
It's nice, but...
By comparison?
There are some Adirondack Great Camps that I consulted on that are like Rockefeller-type Great Camps. You know, really impressive.
Yeah.
This is just your standard... Really, really nice.
It was beautiful, though. Anyway, so what'd you do?
I took a look in the crawl space. It's a property being considered to purchase by someone from out of the area.
So this is one of the things you would do as a building analyst?
Yeah, I do. And it's, you know, I don't do that much work now, but this is the type of thing that I will do if somebody's like considering a purchase and like there's some questionable issues like structural or foundation.
Right.
In this case, they had some spray foam installed on the underside of the floorboards in a crawl space, and that wasn't a good idea, so it's created moisture problems. And so I was up there. That was in the lower Adirondacks. That was fun. And today I'm leading a tour of Dimension Fabricators in Schenectady. They are a rebar fabricator, and I've known the gentleman since like the 80s.
Wow.
When I worked at Barry, Betty, and LeDuc Construction and Engineers. And actually, I came from lunch with one of the guys I worked with back then. It was really good to talk about all the old times and how technology has changed in the industry. Anyways, in this Dimension Fabricator tour, it's a good story because this guy used to sell rebar out of the back of his pickup truck to us, and now he has created a team over in Schenectady, and I think they have, you know, maybe 75 employees, and they're one of the largest rebar manufacturers on a difficult project in the East Coast. And when I say rebar, maybe some of our listeners don't know what that is.
Yes, please explain.
Rebar is a reinforcing steel. Rebar is a short term for reinforcing steel. Typically, that's added to concrete when you pour the concrete because concrete has this unique property. Well, has a property where it's really good in compression where you're pushing down on it, but it's really poor in tension and it'll crack easily.
Ah.
So reinforcing steel is just the opposite. It's not so great in compression, but really good intention. So if you're pulling on it, it's really strong.
Now, is there an art to placing the rebar in before you pour the concrete?
No, it's more of a science. It's
a science.
You know, it's to the dimension like rebar should be, 2 inches away from the outside of the concrete, above grade and 3 inches below grade, and that's all laid out in typical architecture engineering plans, the layout of the reinforcing steel, some of that of which we'll go through today.
So the Dimensions Fabricator.
Dimension Fabricator in Schenectady. Great story.
They make the rebar?
No, they don't make it. They buy it in coils, I believe, and then they use that coil stock because it's the least expensive way to purchase the material, and then they fabricate the different configurations to fit inside the formwork.
How flexible? I mean, the rebar I've seen, I can't bend it. How you get it into a coil?
I don't know exactly, but it's probably at the steel. I actually worked in steel mills years ago in Pittsburgh and saw how it's like a rolling mill. It comes out hot and it coils up, and it's a good way to transport it. So anyways, our organization that I belong to, you mentioned the New York State Society of Professional Engineers. We're leading this tour this afternoon for continuing education credit, and it's one of the things that we do. Another one of the things that we do are offer scholarships to high school seniors.
And you have one now.
We have one now, and you need to apply before the end of the month.
Can I apply?
You're not a high school senior.
Yes, but I act like one most of the time.
You act like maybe not quite great junior high or grade school.
Well, thank you very much. This will be our last
show. Well, me too. You and I before the show.
So I watched this video, and I put it on the page, one of your great videos on YouTube. I put it on the page. By the way, if you have a question for Darren Tracy, it's 800-348-2551, or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. Put this video of yours on the page for today's show. And it's about insulating brick walls in a historic building. And ostensibly, I wouldn't give a rat's behind about it, but I found it to be fascinating just because you have to jump through some serious hoops when you are doing work on a historic building.
Historic or old doesn't necessarily have to be historic. It can just be an old building. And this video illustrates a way to insulate the walls, which is really important because price of fuel is going up and up, and costs a lot to heat your home.
Yeah.
So the more energy efficient that you can make your home, the better. And we've talked about this on previous shows. This particular example of insulating requires removal of the inside face of a wall.
So and the whether plaster it's, or whatever.
Plaster, whatever. And it can be a building with a brick facade on the outside or a wood clapboard facade, either way. But it's a technique of cutting rigid insulation, placing it in between the studs, and then sealing it up with spray foam and creating a pretty tight and well-insulated structure. And from a historic home point of view, what's really important to preservationists, and I'm not really a diehard preservationist.
But you've worked on these things.
Oh, and that particular building is on the National Register of Historic Places. It's the one in Glens Falls that we purchased for $1 from the city.
The tiny house.
The tiny house that was condemned.
Yeah.
There's all this housing stock out there, and there's not enough housing for people. So these old houses are a way for people with not a lot of money, whether just starting out in the middle of their at any point in their life, you can get into an older house relatively inexpensive, and this is a way to improve the comfort of the home, improve the cost effectiveness of the home, and also preserve the exterior of the home, which is important to preservationists. They like the original exterior.
But the interior is also important in that there are rules, and you had mentioned that you can't spray foam directly on the brick wall of this place.
Well, any material anything you do to a historic material that would forever damage it is frowned upon by historic preservationists in general. But this brick, it's the inside surface of the brick, and it's going to be covered up. You're never going to see it again. Something needed to be done. The spray foam really helped the structural integrity of the brick. So it's a good solution. Everything's a trade-off, can be a trade-off in life, and this is a good example of that.
Darren Tracy's our guest. Yeah, well, you know, that brick needed reinforcement because it was only one wife wide.
You picked up on that.
How did they come up with that term for the width of a brick wall?
I'm not sure. Do you know how that's spelled?
Probably W-Y-F-E.
W-Y-T-H-E. And I forgot to bring a tool.
Oh.
I mean that tool.
All right.
I brought the word.
You brought the... Anyway, that was very interesting.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break, and then we'll hit the phones. 800-348-2551. It's Darren Tracy today. Home maintenance, repair, and improvement. What say you? We listen to a little Wayne Shorter, yeah? Can't get enough of that one. One of the greatest albums ever. That's Wayne Shorter, and that is Footprints. I say it's the greatest, one of the greatest albums ever. I think it's on Juju, but I'm not sure. I think it is. Zach can look it up for me.
How would you describe that genre of music?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, post-bop, straight ahead. I don't know what you call it, but it's just...
It's jazz of some sort, so like Wayne, dinner jazz.
Dinner jazz? How dare you, sir?
After dinner jazz?
I don't know. But he had John Coltrane's rhythm section.
Okay.
And so it was just a tremendous record. Anyway, enough of that. Darren Tracy's our guest today. It's home improvement and maintenance and whatnot. 800-348-2551 is the number. VoxPop@WAMC.org is the email address. And Jay is in Delmar. Hello, Jay in Delmar.
Hello. Hello.
Welcome.
Yes.
Okay.
So I've got a roof that's pretty good shape, except I've got maybe a 4-foot patch with some moss on it. What's the best way to treat that?
Is that a sloped roof or a flat roof, Jay?
It's sloped, asphalt shingles.
Yeah, if you can reach it, I would lightly brush the moss off with a coarse broom. That's what I would do. There is a solution to algicide type solution you could spray on the roof as well.
Is there any long term deterioration or?
It can affect the longevity of the shingle material, so that's why it's a good idea to take that algae or moss and whatever's growing up there off.
What will the moss do?
I think it eats into the asphalt product.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, be darned.
I've got a good crop of it on a shed that's,
me too,
that's covered up. And, you know,
I was thinking it's
like green roofs. That's the thing, right? But I guess it can get into the asphalt material.
Okay. Jay.
What about the, these people pressure wash, and there's a sealant that they put in. Is that any good?
That would help the longevity of a roof. I've seen that advertised. I don't know a lot about it, but just in general, if you apply a sealant to the roof and, you know, less UV damage, less water damage, it will extend the life. Whether it's a good payback, I'm not sure.
All right, Jay, thanks a lot. Appreciate the call. It's 800-348-2551. Those green roofs, what a great idea, huh?
Well, they're kind of expensive,
yeah.
And I'm not sure long-term. I've been over to campus at SUNY Albany. There was a tour of a green roof over there. It's kind of interesting. Helps take care of stormwater problems.
Yeah, and you can put goats and stuff up there. If you can get them up the ladder, they can graze, you know? That's right. Let's go to Jim oh, my heavens. Well, this is odd. Jim usually calls only a Medical Monday out in Matamoras, Pennsylvania, but now he's going to call. Hello, Jim. What's up?
How come these 50-year architectural shingles are only lasting less than 20 years?
Okay. Don't say the brand.
Is that a question? Why is that?
Yeah.
They're just not made as well as what older shingles used to be. I find that the case. I mean, there's a warranty for these long warranties, but Usually you only get about 20, 25 years out of a shingle. And I find the architectural shingles, which are laminated, they don't stand up as well as an old conventional three-tab shingle of the same quality. It's unfortunate. Warranty, if you keep all your paperwork and document things, you can probably apply for a warranty, but the warranty wouldn't be for the full amount of the shingle. It would be spread out over the full time, so it'd just be a small fraction. If you're like on year 30 for a 40-year shingle, you're going to get a small fraction of your money.
Jim.
Okay, thank you.
All right, well, thank you very much. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's Home Improvement and Maintenance Today with Darren Tracy. Let's go to Steventown, and Jim is over there. Jim, how are things in Steventown?
Great. How are you?
Well, you know, about the same. What's up?
So we have a 35-year-old stick-built colonial, and my question is regarding the staircase. But half of the staircase going to the second floor is open, and I'd like to know if I can open up the wall along the staircase going to the basement.
You should be able to. It's about 13 steps from first floor to second floor.
Yes.
You should be able to. Should be able to span that without any wall support underneath. Somebody with some knowledge should take a look at that to confirm that. But in general terms, you can probably do that.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot for the call. And let's go to Worthington. No, wrong button, Ray. Incompetence. Hello, Jack. How you doing there, buddy?
Not too bad. Listen, I had a quick question for you. I know I've already talked to you twice in 2 weeks.
Wow.
Listen. Last Thursday night when the wind came through Worthington, it took about 40% of my roof off on the barn. So it's a steel roof. Everything seems to be fine. I found somebody that patched it just temporarily. But now he gave me a nice quote, except that now we've got an embargo on steel and aluminum that may increase the price by at least 40%.
Ouch.
What do I do with my insurance claim?
Oh, that's a wonderful question.
Yeah, but not a question for me. Right?
I see.
More of a insurance company question.
Okay, is it going to be available, though? You remember what happened with the plywood?
Yeah, during the COVID.
You just couldn't even get plywood.
Yeah, I know.
I was at a trade show, continuing education show yesterday, with Grundfos Pumps, and some of the parts are made overseas. And I asked that question. It's like... Doesn't know. Everybody doesn't know because positions are changing. They're
daily,
just
by the hour,
in a holding pattern. So we don't know. Your lumberyard probably has a stock of that material right now.
Go
to your better lumberyards, and if you go now,
they might not jack it up until they have to buy new.
It's
possible.
Yeah, right.
It's just.
I doubt that they would instantly raise their price on material that they've already purchased.
Although I believe gas. Stations do just that, but
that's a different type of commodity than like metal roofing.
They're gonna do what they can do.
You betcha.
Okay, it's just I think that's an important question to know what's going to happen here.
With every part of building material, I've heard that rough framing packages could go up 40% on new houses.
Yikes! Well, Jack, move fast, buddy. Thank you for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. You're a tin roof guy, though. You like the tin roofs, right?
I like metal roofs.
Yeah. Not tin anymore?
No, they're not tin. No.
What are they
Tins
made?
Last a long time. Just basically carbon steel, and then they have a high-quality polymer finish on the outside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You ever see those prefab steel buildings that they advertise on TV?
Oh, yeah. I used to be a distributor for
really?
One of them. Yeah.
I'm thinking about just taking a bulldozer to my house and putting one of those up. Do you think the neighbors would be upset?
If you do, put a basement under it.
It's a really good plan. Darren Tracy's our guest today. 800-348-2551 is our number. This email from James. I have a plumbing concern for Darren. Can you please explain the benefits of using pipe insulation? Is it only to prevent pipes from bursting, or are there other benefits? Also, pipe insulation only good for hot water pipes, or should you also use it on the cold water pipes? And finally, is pipe insulation, if it's so good, why is it that the professionals never install it whenever they replace or fix pipes? Shouldn't every home have pipe insulation? And that's from James.
Okay, there are quite a few questions there, so I won't remember them all.
All right, I'll try.
I'll just generally say that pipe insulation main purpose is not to keep a pipe from bursting. And when I say bursting, that would be from freezing. If you had that cold air in your basement, you don't want air that cold in your basement or crawl space so that the pipes are going to freeze. The main purpose of insulation is for cold water to keep it from condensing in the summertime and dripping and making the space more humid. And then for the hot water energy conservation to keep the heat that you've paid money to heat your hot water with, keep that temperature in the pipe instead of flowing out through. So, yeah, it's a good idea. Why do repairmen not do it? It's an extra step and extra expense. A lot of new homes don't do that. The building codes are starting to incorporate pipe insulation, definitely commercially. So,
all right. Eileen has a question for you. Eileen says, I thought I heard Darren say using spray foam in a crawl space is not a good idea. We have a crawl space with a dirt floor and are considering replacing our old insulation in the floor above, which some is now hanging down a bit. Is this a good idea or not?
No, it's not a good idea. The best way to treat a crawl space is treat it like a basement for really short people. So you'd want to insulate the sidewalls, the exterior sidewalls. Don't insulate the underside of the floor. That can be problematic, especially if there's no vapor barrier in a dirt floor. That was exactly the problem that I encountered this past weekend. Spray foam around the perimeter. You can use a rigid board and spray foam the joints around the rib joist. It's called a rim joist or a band joist. Use it there. It's a great idea, but don't put, don't put it on the underside of the floor. Insulate the exterior walls, put a vapor barrier on top of the earth to keep the moisture from wicking up.
Now, Andrew writes in, what are your thoughts on installing sun tubes to add light to a one-bedroom ranch? Are they easy to install? Are they prone to leaking like sky windows? Are there any particular flashing techniques I should research to give me the best chance against leaks from installing sun tubes? My question, which I'll add, what is a sun tube? I've never heard of these things.
Well, it's just a shaft to allow light to come through. I think the only difference between a skylight and a sun tube is that a skylight would be operable or have the ability to be operable, and a tube is like a round shaft.
Right.
I don't think you should have any holes in a roof.
Yeah.
Put your holes in a wall. That's my opinion. Sooner or later, they're going to leak. Some people will argue differently. Oh, no, these are really good quality, and they sooner or later they leak, and they're also an energy loss point, more so than in the walls.
Okay. Darren Tracy's our guest today. It's 800-348-2551. Let's go back to our phone lines. We'll go to Rotterdam. Glenn, you're on.
Hello, guys.
Howdy.
I got a question. I got a 75-year-old house, and National Grid was over here last month, and they want to change the gas meter in the basement. And they said they're going to have to maybe change some pipes and do some tearing up outside. Can I tell them no?
Well, I don't know if Darren can answer that, but go ahead.
Yeah.
We've had that done. We have a couple of rental properties. We've had that done by National Grid. You could try telling them no. I think it's a good idea to have the meter outside, and the reason for that is they don't have to come in to read it. Even if they put a remote meter on it, it's a good idea because you get the meter outside, and you know that's a place of a potential gas leak. And if it's inside, it's older piping. It gives you an opportunity to upgrade your piping. I think it would.
And then they say they're going to tear up some of my outside. I don't know. If they tear up my driveway or tear up my lawn or whatever, will they repair it?
Yes, they typically would. They, in the situation where they removed a meter from our property, an old house in the basement, put it outside, they did all the excavation work and backfill work. We did have to get on them to bring back some topsoil and seed because they went over it with some light sand and it didn't come in, but they were receptive. We called them and they brought some topsoil back and seed.
How is the soil? I've had outside water pipes done and things like that in our house, and this was 20 years ago, and they came in, did a spectacular job, but then the fill was so rotten that I've had weed problems in the front yard since.
So rotten as in, like, just not, I mean, you have weeds. Might be a question for the home improvement show. Get rid of the spray something that gets rid of the weeds. And
oh, the gardening show.
Grass. Yeah,
All right, now you're blowing me off on that. All right, that's fine. Darren Tracy's here, and we're frankly at odds. Glenn, do you want to follow up?
Oh, thanks for the information. I appreciate it, guys.
You got it, Nate. Thanks a lot. All right, let's see what else is. Okay, we'll go to Shaftesbury. And I don't know how to say your name. Say it for me.
That's okay. It's Yaronit.
Yaronit. Where is that from?
It's Hebrew.
That is such a cool name. All right, you're on.
Thanks. So when my husband and I bought our house to remodel it, we had it tested for radon, like a short-term test. I'm not sure if it was like a day or an hour. I don't know. And it came back with like radon levels that were not above, you know, concern level. So we bought our house. And then that was about 10 years ago. And more recently, we got like a long-term, I don't know, 6 months or so test from the state of Vermont to do. We like left it and then sent it into the Department of Health, I believe. And it came back with like a concern level, a level of concern. And I'm wondering how, I mean, I know that you're supposed to test every, I think it's like 5 years, which we didn't really know about, but if there's, you know, what would account for the change, or if something in our remodeling process could have caused the radon levels to all of a sudden be, you know, not what they should be.
Okay, Yarnett, the first thing that comes to my mind is that the initial test may not have been conducted properly. I know anytime there's a real estate transaction in New York State,
Vermont.
She's in Vermont.
Yeah, I think so.
A lot of the New England states are the same, so it may be the same regulation there. You have to have a radon test when there's a transfer of ownership. And those tests can be disturbed. If somebody comes in and opens up a door, basement door, supposed to be a confined space and shut, windows closed, maybe if a window wasn't closed totally tight and you had some fresh air moving in there, that might have accounted for a radon level lower than what you have had recently with a tighter home. And
maybe this test was wrong.
It could be. Could be. Do it again. And see how close you are to the level. I forgot what the level was. Around 5 or 7 is like a threshold.
And that's parts per million?
No, I'm not sure what the unit is on that. Yeah, do you recall what...
Yeah.
Yarnett, what the level was that you read?
Originally, I think it was like 2-something, and then I think the safe level is 4-something, and now ours is higher.
Interesting.
Which is, you know, an unpleasant surprise. But I have another question, a follow-up to that, about like the remediation of it, because we're about to have a guy come in. It's very hard to find someone in our area. I don't know about the Capital District, but in our area, there's like one guy, you know, who will come out to the Bennington area and do it. And a friend of mine said that she was told the remediation pipe should go through the wall. But she... when my friend had it done, it was put outside the wall, and I think that's what the guy, you know, outside the house, going up the side of the house. And that's what the person plans to do for our house as well. And it's kind of not very nice looking. So I don't know if you know if the standard is to have the pipe go through the wall. Like, I mean, like within the wall.
Yeah.
Up through the roof.
Well, somehow the pipe has to get from the inside of your building to the outside of the building. You know, where that occurs at the basement level, or someplace up higher. If you have new construction, you could conceal that pipe and have it go up through, say, the roof line where your plumbing vent would go through.
So, Yarnit, you're talking about what you prefer to do is to basically hide this behind sheetrock or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, it would be ideal. However, we also, when we renovated our house, we filled the walls with spray foam. So I don't know, you know, if it's impossible to put a pipe through there. Like, if I have no idea. So that's what I'm wondering.
Yeah, it's difficult to do that. You might be stuck with running a pipe up the outside of your building.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would get a second
basically,
opinion.
Yeah, you can get a second opinion, but basically you want to capture any gases that might be underneath your floor slab in the basement if you have a slab, or if you don't have a slab, any that's coming up through the earth anywhere, and you want to have a vapor barrier down. Typically you have a perimeter piping system that captures the gas, and then a fan, and then you get it out of the house.
So you're actively propelling it out of the house.
That's right.
Yep. All right, Yarnit, thanks for the call. No, I meant a second opinion on the test. Do it one more time before you spend a boatload of money.
Definitely.
Number here is 800-348-2551. It's Darren Tracy today. Home maintenance, repair, and improvement. We'll be back. Fox Pop WAMC 800-348-2551. I was thinking about that. It's Billy May doing a song that you couldn't put on the radio. Well, you couldn't release it now. It's Music to Watch Girls By. This is from the 60s. And I think there'd be some complaints, frankly. I don't know. Let's go to Adams, Massachusetts. Edward, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you? I asked a question there. I got a home I bought it 8 years ago or so. Overhangs over the winter months accumulate a fine black mold on the underneath of the overhangs. Every year I wash it off with a detergent and water comes off nice. Paint is perfect. Next year, same thing, black mold underneath the overhang again. I'm not concealed with trees or leaves. I'm kind of out in the open. What's the story? Is it an interior problem, exterior problem, or please help me? Thank you.
Those overhangs in the building industry are called soffits, and you've got a moisture, high humidity problem. If I had to guess, it probably happens more on the north side of your house than the south side of your house. Is that the case?
It's a little bit darker on the north side of the house. Yes, that's correct.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
Boy, so, you're good.
Yeah, it's not uncommon. As long as it's not decaying the wood, structurally, it's not an issue. And if you're able to get it off with a broom or a hose, I know that stuff occurs on the back side of our house on the siding, and it bothers my wife. It doesn't bother me, but I'll just go out there on a dry day with a broom and broom it off.
I'll make her do it.
Well, we have a division of labor, and that doesn't fall within hers.
All right, fair enough. Edward, do you want to follow up?
Just any long-time fish, even a fix, if I can spend a few bucks to get rid of it, you know, to not come back next year.
Yeah, well, you mentioned paint, so it's a painted surface versus a vinyl surface. You could paint it with a algicide in the paint.
Does that stuff work well?
I think it does, yeah. 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 And try that and see if that helps.
So it's a painted surface, you said?
I said algicide. It's mildew side, I think.
Mildew is a resistant paint.
Proper term. And you can add it to any paint that's not a specialty mildew side paint. A little packet you can add.
And oh, okay.
That I would guess that would help.
What do you think, Edward?
I'll take a shot at it. I'm willing to try it this year.
Thanks
a lot. Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Appreciate the call. John in Woodstock says, shingles. I believe pressure washing asphalt shingles can damage the particle surface and shorten the life of the shingles. True?
Yeah, that's true. You could do it from a distance carefully, and it would be okay. But it's, you know, it does have the potential to damage. I probably wouldn't do that. I would use a soft bristled broom, broom them off, and maybe a hose, and then in that case, I think it's an algicide, not a mildicide.
This is from Nicholas, who is a, I don't know, something to do with houses. Radon over 4 picoliters is considered dangerous. You want the pipe to be external with the fan outside as well, because you do not want it to disperse in the house if a seal breaks or the fan malfunctions. That makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
All right, and let's see. This is from Jeff. What is a I don't want to do prices. I'm sorry to say, Jeff, we really don't do prices like that. He had a question about tile installers and what he should be paying, but we'll just leave that alone, and you're going to do your due diligence, Jeff. Paul is in Pittsfield. Paul, you're on with Darren Tracy.
Thanks. So my house is about 100 years old. I have a wooden staircase going from the first floor up to the second floor. It's completely enclosed. The left side's on an exterior wall. The right side's, you know, enclosed by the wall. But the stairs, the treads and the risers are separating, and I think the way these staircases are constructed is with, there's like wedges that are in the dados where the treads and the risers, you know, are attached to the stringer. Is there any way to repair that without taking the whole thing apart?
If you have access to the underside, you could tap those wedges in and then put a to keep that wedge in place.
The only way to get access from the underside, I would have to cut open the basement flooring, right, to get, and then try to get up there from inside.
Well, I'm not exactly. So, however you access the underside of the stairs, if you could gain access.
It's not open.
If it is sheetrock or what's covering it.
So it's the first floor, so it really isn't any floor. It would just be the subflooring, the planks of the subflooring from the that are over the floor joists in the basement.
Okay, so the stairs are going from the first floor to the second floor, or basement to first floor?
Right.
First floor to second floor. Well, there's a space underneath those stairs somewhere. There's probably a closet there. Someplace there's a space underneath those stairs. And if you could access that, it may be covered up with, you said it's a 100-year-old house, so it might be lath and plaster versus sheetrock. If it bothered you enough, you could somehow expose the surface of the underside of those stairs, tap the shims in, maybe install some glue first, and then a finish nail or a screw to keep the shim in place. That's what I would suggest.
Paul, thanks a lot for the call. It's 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy is our guest. And let's see, we'll go to Milanville. It's Maureen's turn. Hello, Maureen.
Hi, can you hear me?
You bet.
Okay, for a minute I couldn't hear you. Okay, so I have water leaking in my basement coming in through the outside staircase, the stairs, from outside into the basement. So I think they patched it before I moved in, and I was just wondering what's the best person to call to take care of that. When I first saw it, I had somebody come out, but they just wanted to put a drain around the perimeter of the wall and let any water that comes into the house go into that drain. And I don't know if they were going to use a pump or what. So I didn't know if I should call a mason or what I should do.
You could try a mason or your local handyman. It's that time of year where there's a lot of water running. The best way to handle water is to keep it out of the basement in the first place. So I would suggest putting that drain pipe, perforated pipe, around the perimeter of the stairs, often called the bilco entrance on the outside. The drain pipe on the outside, and direct that pipe over to a gravity area where it could drain to daylight. And prevent water from getting there.
So you're
in
doing
the first
it outside.
Yeah, that's what I would try first.
Outside of the house.
Yeah. Make sure your grade pitches away from your foundation. I know over a year, over time, people landscape their lawn, and there'll be a berm that builds up adjacent to the foundation, so the water comes down,
yep.
and it can't shed away from the house, so it just goes down and tends to get in the basement. So make sure that the grade pitches away.
Okay.
There's a whole
yeah.
science to that. You can look on my YouTube channel and...
Yeah,
it's Darren Tracy Engineering. If you YouTube that, and my website, West Branch Engineering. I think I have a detail of how to install some sheathing or a polyethylene barrier and pea stone.
Because that's a common problem.
Yeah, it's a common problem.
And,
yeah.
and Maureen, if you forgot mm-hmm. or you forget what Darren just said about his address for his YouTube channel, you could just go to WAMC mm-hmm. and go to the Vox Pop page for today, and there is a link to both Darren's website. And to his YouTube channel. There are some really great videos on there. You will have fun and you'll learn a lot too. And thank you for the call. 800-348-2551. Sue is in Monroe. Sue.
Hi. I'm at the beginning stages of getting some estimates to replace a sliding glass door in my home. The original is wood. There's some rot. It's not energy efficient. And I've just gotten some varying opinions about different types of materials and wondered if you had any thoughts on what type of material might be the best to look for.
Well, I like a product that is clad with something like aluminum or vinyl so you don't have to paint it. So that's yeah. my opinion about that.
Yeah. Composite? Do they have any composite windows?
Not really. The sliders.
Usually, sliding glass.
Yeah, sliders. Usually they're all made of uh-huh. aluminum, or they could be wood and clad with vinyl or aluminum.
Yeah. Boy, they ain't cheap.
Okay.
No, they're not. Ya. They're not cheap. And
no.
All right. Well, Sue, do you want to follow up real quick?
Okay. No, it really was just the, you know,
okay.
preferred material was my question.
Darren has
thank you so much.
Darren yep. wants to add one more thing here.
Right, if it was just wood and you okay. had to if it was just wood and you had to prime and paint it, that's a nuisance and that's an area that takes a lot of abuse. I wouldn't go with just wood that you primed and paint. I will say if you do replace it, make sure that when you install the new unit, you seal the perimeter with a spray foam to make a nice energy efficient air seal.
Yes, okay.
All right, Sue. Let us we'll know how you did. Call us in a couple of months when you have it done.
Thank you. I will.
Thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy's here. Did we mention the scholarship? We did, didn't we, early on?
Just briefly, and it's several scholarships up to $3,000 to $5,000 total.
For high school kids.
High school seniors in a wide listening area around the Capital District. It is just New York State. And they need to be going to a school with an engineering program.
Okay. All right. And there's a link to that as well on today's show page, Vox Pop, which you go to WAMC.org, and then you'll see it. What say you? We go to Swan Lake. Hello, Laura. I won't sing it. Go ahead. You're on.
Hi. I've been living with sub pumps, two of them, for 45 years or so. And I'm just wondering, you know, as I'm getting older, it is an older house, and as long as I have electricity, the sub pumps work. But is there an alternative? I had one basement people come in, and they wanted to beautify this basement for $21,000. I said, nah. Any suggestions?
Well, as I mentioned earlier in the program, keep the water away from the house, away from entering the basement.
Well, how do I do that?
Make sure that the grade pitches away from your foundation, away, and you could put an impermeable layer so that water, any water that did drip there doesn't go straight down, and that could be like 6 mil poly, and then cover that up with clay and grass seed or pea stone. That's one idea. You can install gutters on your house. You have the added problem.
I have gutters.
Okay, that's good. That's good.
But nevertheless, the water still comes in.
Yeah. That's kind of a...
And it's an older home.
Yeah, it's just what I was going to say. It's a trademark of many older homes.
You know, and...
water coming in the basement.
I don't, you know, who do I hire? Or, like I said, I'm almost hitting 80 here, living alone with my dog, and I just don't know what to do at this point.
What I would do is just make sure that you have good working pumps in order, replace them every couple of years or everyone.
I do.
Okay, because it can be catastrophic if they fail, and the cost of a unit is not that much, $100, and anything that you would hire a contractor to do that would really solve the problem, like a Cadillac solution would be to get in there with a backhoe and dig around the whole exterior of the foundation, install a
right.
foundation drain, all that's going to cost you several thousand dollars, many thousands of
right.
dollars. So you're better ahead, Laura, just to keep your buy good quality sump pumps and keep them up. Sorry that there's not a more perfect answer to that, but that's what I would suggest.
Laura, thanks a lot for the call. Kathy writes in, we have a low basement that runs the length of the house with cinder blocks sitting on bedrock. We never put any ventilation in. Would it be possible to install windows in the cinder blocks?
Sure. And I wouldn't put them there for the purpose of ventilation. That's not a good idea. Because if you open up the windows in the summertime... You know, what happens if you open up the windows in the summertime, right?
You're going to get condensation
stuff.
That's right.
Right,
yeah.
So that warm air is going to go inside, and it's going to cool and condense and create problems.
Mm.
You can put windows in there for light or for the shoulder seasons. But what you'd want to do is insulate the perimeter of those walls and not ventilate that crawl space. Make sure there's a vapor barrier on top of the soil.
Here's an email from Keith in East Greenbush. When do you consider a teardown? Our home is over 90 years old. It was built by a hobbyist. That's something you don't want to hear from the realtor. It was built by a hobbyist. It is a cape. It's been expanded and up and out a few times. 5 bedrooms, 1.5 baths. There are few square corners. Plumb walls or level floors. Little insulation. It is half basement, half 6 foot. High cellar. There are lots of John Mansfield products. I don't know what that is, including siding, ceiling, wallboard, and flooring. Probably some lead paint. The framing is under spec. One room we remodeled had 14-foot, 2x6 floor joists on 27-inch centers. We have redone the plumbing, electric, heating, roof, and windows. The ceilings are low, halls are narrow, stairs are steep. Well, you really way to sell it, Keith. It really sounds great. What do you think?
It's a tough call. It's a tough call. There are a lot of variables there.
What's John Mansfield's products? What is that?
It's a siding material.
Oh, okay. So it's not like an old thing. It's today. It's around.
I'm not sure if they're still in business.
Okay.
Yeah. There are a lot of variables. You know, the value of the land, how handy you are to do the work yourself, how much money you have. It's really really hard for me to say, not knowing all those variables to plug into some sort of differential equation, say, oh, then flip a coin.
I think we know where Keith is leaning based on the description.
I mean, it's tough. You know the situation. It's
no, believe me, I know the situation.
Yeah, it's a tough call. It's a tough call.
Okay, fair enough. So you're not going to make that call for Keith.
No.
I mean, his house was built by a hobbyist. My house was, I think, built by Martians. So I think, all right, unfortunately, we're out of time for calls. Darren Tracy, once again, how do people find you online, et cetera, et cetera?
I have two websites. One's a construction site, one's an engineering site. WestBranchEngineering.com is my engineering site. They're old sites. They should be updated, but I just haven't gotten
around to it. Well, you don't have a webmaster.
Yeah, I don't have a webmaster. I don't need any more work, so.
Maybe Zach the engineer wants to pick up some extra work.
Is that
you want
right?
to be Darren's webmaster?
The other one is WestBranchInc.com. That's a construction company. And again, I have a YouTube channel. Search Darren Tracy Engineer. And I also have a West Branch Facebook. If you're a Facebook person, you can type in West Branch, and I have some interesting tidbits there as well.
Well, this was a fun show. Darren Tracy, owing to my exemplary skills as a producer, you're somehow booked for next month as well. So we'll see you, and we'll do it all again.
Okay, Ray, I'll be back, and I like to do it.
I'm glad, man.
Keep them coming.
Let's do Name That Tool again, yeah?
Let's do Name That Tool, okay.
Support.
Well, we did that Name That Word.
That was very good.
It's a good substitute.
Very nice, but I you know, we have to bring in a bandsaw or something. Capital Roots is one of our underwriters. Support comes from Capital Roots. Good Food Market, 598 River Street, Troy, featuring fresh local produce, meats, dairy, and much more, working to make nutritious food accessible for all at the Good Food Market, capitalroots.org. At Neller Insurance, Copaic, Valencia, New Lebanon, Chatham, family-owned, insuring homes, autos, farms, businesses, and lives, supporting public radio in the Hudson Valley, Berkshires, and Northwest Connecticut, knellerins.com. Thanks to Darren Tracy. Thanks to Zachary Malloy, our engineer. Andrea Leong screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Bye, Jiminy. Tomorrow we garden. We'll see you, too.